This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Across Australia, on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community radio stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Word for Word. Dean Beck with you today. Thank you so much for joining me on what is going to be an interesting day of conversation on an international scale, shall we say. You're probably familiar with the It Gets Better campaign, something that started by Dan Savage in the USA and has taken the world by storm. Well, our Asian neighbours have got something a little similar, but it's called I Will Survive, and the founder of that is Liao Yangfa. He joins us on Word for Word. Welcome.
Hi, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Yangfa, this is a little idea that basically blossomed out of a personal tragedy that you experienced with a friend.
Yes, sadly. The last time I was in Australia in 2009, I was actually in Sydney when I got news that someone we knew got a text message from a mutual friend saying that, well, he had just killed himself a few days before his own birthday. And I thought, sitting there with that text message away from home, I just felt so lost and helpless. And also thinking back, literally a few days before getting that text message, I had just been on Facebook with him because I was on holiday. And he was talking about how he was feeling very down. And he actually had expressed thoughts of ending his life. And because I was so far away, the only connection I had with him at that point was through Facebook. Mm. So when I finally got that news saying he had actually killed himself, that was devastating.
It
was,
indeed. Yeah. Indeed. Let's talk about your homeland, Singapore. We'll get to I Will Survive and the great work that it's doing a little later. But tell us about your childhood in Singapore.
Well, I'm Chinese-Singaporean by birth and nationality. Grew up in a, I suppose, very middle-class, kind of average family. I'm the youngest of three children.
Explain for us what Chinese-Singaporean means, because many may not realise, but there is a degree of racism within Southeast Asia amongst various groups that we have no comprehension of here.
Okay.
And then, for example, in Malaysia, it's extreme, and yet we don't even acknowledge it here. So, yeah, just let's elaborate on that. Yeah.
I suppose with Singapore, we pride ourselves in being a very multi-ethnic, multi-racial kind of a community, a country. So you have the main ethnic groups would be the Chinese, the Malays, and the Indians, and with other sort of minority races as well. So my family, in fact, my grandparents came from China, mainland China, maybe 100 years ago. So both my parents and myself and my siblings, I suppose you call ourselves second or third generation Singaporeans. So in that family, I've got two older sisters, and so I'm the youngest of three. And I'm a social worker by profession.
That right, which kind of links you nicely into your little project. But as a child growing up in Singapore, tell us about your upbringing, I guess, your education, and when you personally came to realise that perhaps you were a little different.
Ah, okay. So, well, I wouldn't say my upbringing was a very typical one in terms of education and all that. Well, I could say I went to one of the better schools in Singapore. I think I went to all-boys schools up to I was about 16. So in that kind of environment, it wasn't too hard to discover one's own sexuality. So I, as it turned out, most of my classmates turned out to be either gay or bi anyway.
Really? see what you're painting for us is a picture of the boys, all boys school that some gay men live in a fantasy of an all boys school that
doesn't
is like
happen
that.
All over the world.
Well, that's what we're told. But you know, I've read many stories of high end English all boys schools where that just is so suppressed that. It never came to fruition.
Right. Yeah. Well, it was never a boarding school, obviously. It was a local school. Mm. But I certainly felt mixed feelings actually thinking back. I mean, it's all boys, so, you know, everyone's sort of growing up with their own angst and all that. But the strange thing is you never think that most people would be gay, or anyone for that matter. You always think
you're the only one.
I'm the only one. Yeah. So I still remember that very moment where I finally came out to a classmate. I think this was when we were in our very late teens, after we had left school, and we just looked at each other and went, why didn't we know? I wish we had known earlier. Yeah, but we didn't.
And it's one of those things too.
He turned out to be gay as well. So yeah.
When you're in the thick of it too, sometimes you don't actually, there isn't that point of acknowledgement because you're being it.
So on the one hand, you know, it's not all guys and you get on with things. And on the other hand, you still feel very alone because you wonder.
No one's talking about it.
Yeah, no one's talking about it. Mm. You know, I am, but don't quite have the word for it.
Sure.
But yeah.
See, that sort of coming out is universal, no matter what country you live in.
It is, isn't it? It is so universal. Yeah.
So when you came to that realization, how did that come about and how did you come out? Did you go to your family? Was it through your school and your friends? How did that come about?
Well, very universal theme we often hear about is that coming out is not often a one-step process. It's a series of stages. For me, I can think back to when... going through secondary school, and for us, secondary school is 13 to 16, 17, right? So at that age, when you're in the teens. For me, again, reading other people's stories was very important. And this was, back before the age of the internet. So when one would sort of find books, be it fiction or novels or short stories, and make that kind of connection with other people, other gay people all over the world, and that's where that whole sense of, ooh, other people go through that too.
Singapore, we know as a place where you get thrown into jail if you drop some chewing gum or a cigarette butt. So what is Singapore like?
Well, not always.
You might
get slapped with a huge fine, but
yeah.
And send you back home if you're not from Singapore.
Yeah, exactly. Which for us sounds very extreme for something so minor. So where does homosexuality sit back in your childhood legally and today? And has it changed?
Okay. It hasn't changed, but what I can say that at this point in time, we still have that very particular piece of legislation. It's called the Section 377A of the Penal Code. It's one of those unfortunate legacies of our British colonialism. Basically, Section 377A is an anti-sodomy law. Mm-hmm. Basically, criminalizes same-sex consensual activity between two men.
And that hasn't changed?
It hasn't changed. There was an attempt to repeal it back in 2007 through Parliament. It got quite far, but not far enough. It's still in the statutes. But it got to the point where members of Parliament were debating the issue in Parliament. So that in itself was very, very important.
Right. Yeah. At its core, Singapore, what is Singapore's core religion?
It's a secular state, so, Christians do form a significant minority. Mm-hmm. So Christianity is not the majority religion in Singapore. So again, there's with the diversity in ethnic groups and races. So you get Buddhism, Taoism, Muslims, Hinduism, Hindus, and of course Christians and their various denominations as well.
And so
it's diversity of religion.
There's not a prominent religion that is... I guess, infiltrating the political system?
Not predominantly, no. But again, as we know, different religious or ethnic groups may have different levels of power and influence. So.
But at its core, it's the old English colonialism that is the law that... And we see this all over the world, in Africa, in places far and wide where the English have brought upon us this law, and it stays to this day, are yet to be changed. And, yes. and that such a law didn't exist prior.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And yeah, so I think among the Commonwealth countries, Singapore, Malaysia, India has repealed it. Australia certainly has got rid of that. But yeah, quite a few of us still have hung on to that for better or worse. But having said that, right now, even as we speak, maybe within the next couple of months or so, we do have two cases, court cases coming up before the High Court in Singapore to contest the constitutionality of Section 377A. So right. we've done the...
On a human rights level or...?
Yes, constitutional level. So it's a constitutional challenge. So the attempt to repeal it in Parliament in 2007, that went on, didn't work. So now it's over to the courts. And I don't think I can say too much about it because, yeah. So but at this point, it's very exciting. So, yeah. Keep watching in the news.
Indeed. Your nearby neighbours in Malaysia have used these particular laws to political advantage on a number of occasions.
Unfortunately.
That must be frightening and sad and scary and all sorts of things for you.
Well, personally, it does stir up some mixed feelings. As I mean, on one hand, it's frightening to know that it could get really awful. In that sense, whether it's politically or personal level, and on the other hand, there's the sense of mixed relief or glad we're not in Malaysia. or rather, it's not happening to that dangerous extent in Singapore because back in 2007, when we tried to repeal that Section 377A, wrapping up the parliamentary debates, the Prime Minister did give assurance that they would not enforce that piece of legislation. But that in itself just sounds so strange because here you have a piece of legislation.
Why have we got this law that you're not using?
Yes. So basically what he's saying is we'll keep it there, but the LGBT community has my assurance that we will not use it. But it's just a paradox.
So. Yeah. And I guess that the worry in that space is that at any point in time down the track, some other government / dictator, whatever, could just say, hang on, we got this law,
bring it on. It's still there. So the assurance is probably a temporary one. And careful choice of words as well. We will not enforce it. So
Singapore had a leader for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the world's longest serving head of government.
Is it considered a democracy?
Parliamentary democracy, yes, apparently. Still based loosely on the Westminster model.
As long as we just have the one leader.
It's a one large party system with very small opposition parties.
Yeah. And they're kept that way.
And even as we speak, I think we've got a by-election going on, yeah. Nothing to do with the bi and the LGBT, but yeah, a by-election. Because, interestingly enough, a member of parliament has had to step down from his seat because he, a married man, was having an affair with a married woman. So under social pressure and pressure from his party, he had to step down and vacate his seat, thus triggering a by-election.
Right. Well, he's not alone on that sort of political overthrow.
That's universal too.
That
isn't
is
it?
Universal too. Yes. We are speaking with Liao Yangfa. He is the founder of an organisation called I Will Survive. Yangfa, the way that Singapore sits, I guess, in the region, it is a city state.
It is a city state.
It's a tiny place.
Physically,
big population.
Yeah. Physically, probably smaller than most Australian cities, but with a population of more than 5 million, resident population of more than 5 million.
It punches above its weight, really. I mean, on an international scale, Singapore is really does punch above its weight for something so tiny.
We do make the news headlines every now and then for various reasons. Yes, we do.
And I guess internationally, in the last, or going back, say, 20 years, it was known purely for shopping, really.
Well,
you don't hear Singapore being the shopping mecca that it used to be. Is it still?
It depends on what people want out of a shopping experience in Singapore. I suppose people still do. certainly tourists from the region, from within Southeast Asia, from Malaysia, Indonesia, maybe not Thailand, but maybe from the Philippines, do flock to Singapore for the big brand names and all that. And of course, we've had two new casinos. Well, they're not new anymore. Two casinos built within the last 3 years. So I suppose people do come to Singapore for the casinos as well. Not something that...
You know. It was always huge on... tertiary education.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an uncle who retired from RMIT here in Melbourne only to get a very nice posting in Singapore and two contracts thereafter. So in his early retirement years, he did very well out of that.
Nice.
But what else is Singapore known for? What is its main output?
I think I'm supposed to say people, but we haven't got enough of Singaporeans. We don't actually produce much. We haven't got we haven't got agriculture, not sufficiently enough to do it for export.
You've got no land for agriculture.
So a lot of what we do is for historical reasons, not trade, import, export. So as a hub for trade, aerospace hub, trading port. We've still got that world-renowned port there, I think.
And a financial hub.
And financial hub, absolutely, yes. Mm. Banking services and investment services and all that. That seems to be a big thing in Singapore. We want to be the hub for everything and everyone. Education hub, I think.
Yes, yeah.
That financial hub.
But really,
trade hub.
You got to bring everything in.
And make money out of shipping out.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Interesting. We spoke a little bit about Malaysia and I guess some of the... It still baffles me that the world does not know the tremendous racism that is inherent within Malaysia. And it is, I would put down as being amongst the worst in the world at present, but it's not acknowledged. But some of the other areas, Singapore's very different to Thailand.
Yes.
So let's just take a little journey around the region, if you will.
Let's do that.
Thailand has had all sorts of troubles over the years. It's had military coup after military coup and still having some political issues at present. God bless the king, because if we say otherwise, we're all in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your take on the region and its understanding of the queer community?
If I'm not wrong, Singapore, well, one of the things we often pride ourselves in is that we are one of the more politically stable countries within Southeast Asia.
Well, yes.
Notice there's the word stability.
Dictatorships tend to do that.
Political stability and I suppose financial confidence as well. If I'm not wrong, we're still considered the richest Southeast Asian country. Well,
which ain't bad for virtually nothing. It's pretty good.
It just means everything is really, really expensive, in Singapore, except for public transport, but that's another thing. But again, some of your listeners might be aware that we've got this ASEAN, Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Mm. So it's a network, it's not quite a political union, but a political, maybe it's a federation of 10 Southeast Asian nations. But the fact is, within ASEAN, we have Singapore, and then we've got Burma, Indonesia, Philippines.
Is Burma a new addition?
Yes, yeah, right. And all the Indo-Chinese countries as well, Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. So that diversity within that group, that collection of Southeast Asian nations. So lots of differences there. We like to think that there's similarities, but often, you know, it's just so much difference.
So different, yeah. Did you study your tertiary education in Singapore?
I studied social policy in the United Kingdom, in London, and I came back to Singapore and did postgraduate studies in social work.
Why social work in Singapore? It's something that doesn't... it doesn't compute, but the more I think about it, the more I think how stupid. But
we do exist, social workers in Singapore.
Yeah.
We do, yeah. Why not? I suppose it's something I've...
On the surface, Singapore seems so rich.
Mm-hmm. On the surface.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the other thing that we are also, we've also realized in recent years is we've also got one of the widest income gaps in Asia, if I'm not wrong. Yeah, in Asia.
So...
Perhaps in the world, but maybe certainly in Asia.
Income
inequality is a big issue. So the rich, I think we've got more millionaires per square kilometer than, I don't know, New York City or whatever it is. And then, of course, it's not even multi-millionaires anymore. It's the counting number of billionaires resident in Singapore.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm. But every place has its poor. Is that the area of social work that you work in?
The area of social work I work in is it's about, you know, supporting people through crisis, mm-hmm. through difficult times. And often, you know, people who have limited resources, low incomes or very disadvantaged backgrounds often find it harder to cope with crisis. So that comes into play as well. Mm. And the whole idea of income inequalities, you know, the sense of, I mean, with social work, obviously, it's a lot about not just advocacy, but the sense of social injustice. You see here you have a really, really, and I would say there's a really rich country, and then you have a really low income family who's literally struggling to make ends meet. It just doesn't make sense. Mm. So for me, that's what social work is about. For me, it's not just as a profession, but as a...
Does the government provide social welfare to people in Singapore? Does the government provide facilities? Does the government tax its wealthy enough to provide enough for everyone?
Much of that is in place. If you were to speak to some people in Singapore, they would regard welfare as a dirty word.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Again, so a lot of it is tied to very much employment. So, and of course, there is social support, social welfare for the most disadvantaged families, individuals. But that's a very, what's the term, very residual kind of service. It's social services are not universal. Provision is not universal in Singapore. Unlike some other countries, other welfare systems. So taxation, we don't yet have a very progressive tax system. So there's the cap on income, personal income tax. So the whole idea is to attract people to come to Singapore to invest.
And so, how does Singapore look after its aged?
That's something we have to get around coming to terms with, because not only do we have a declining birth rate, we have a rapidly aging population. So I don't know. Come talk to me again 30 years'
right,
time.
Yeah.
It's getting to the point where we're sitting and realizing, look, we do need to put in place lots of things. For example, we're only starting to talk about services for older people with dementia. Mm, and that is going to happen with the aging population and longer life expectancies. So we're not all there yet, but hope we get there soon at some point.
Young Far, as a gay man, what is in Singapore?
What is in Singapore?
I mean, are there nightclubs or how does one as a gay man experience life in Singapore?
I knew you were going to ask that. I sort of made a list on my way here, because I was worried I'll forget things. So we do have a rather thriving gay scene, depends on what rocks your boat. Yes, we do have clubs and bars and saunas, believe it or not. And so centered very much around Chinatown in Singapore, Chinatown, Tanjong Pagar Road, New Road. And the last time I had this discussion with a friend, we're just sitting in a bar and we're just thinking, within a 5-minute walk, there's at least sort of 5 saunas and 4 or 5 different clubs and bars.
So it's quite a region.
Quite a little clustered, around there. So that is exciting. So that's just nightlife. And of course, there's lots of social community groups as well for young people, women's groups. We do have our own local LGBT counselling service called Uga Chaga. And of course...
Uga Chaga.
Ellie McBeal?
Yeah, is it really?
Yes, it is. So it's based on the fact that...
Uga Chaga.
Yeah, the inner person in you, you know, and discovering that. I know the person who runs it, Brian Chung, and... counseling services for families, for individuals, for couples, and support groups as well. And of course, we have our own local LGBT library and resource center called the Pelangi Pride Center. Excellent, run by an excellent team of volunteers, Elena, Charmaine, and all the rest. And we have our own free community church.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Based on the Metropolitan
Community Church.
Yeah.
Which we've done
very inclusive,
quite a lot.
Yeah, very inclusive kind of a Christian religious setup. I mean, I don't personally attend it, but again, I know the wonderful people around it, Reverend Yap and Miak and colleagues.
Metropolitan Community Church do amazing work right around the world for all of the Christians that are being kicked out of every other Christian denomination.
Or they choose to leave the mainstream churches voluntarily to join the free community church. So just as well.
You young far, you are far more politically correct than I will ever be. And for that, I thank you. We are speaking with Liao Young Far. He's the founder of I Will Survive, a support group for gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender people, an online sort of support group. And we'll come back and find out more about that right after this. You are with Dean Beck across Australia on the Community Radio Network. You're listening to Word for Word.
Word for Word, delve into the extraordinary lives of everyday people.
Word for Word, challenging, inspiring, engaging and entertaining. Broadcast live on Joy 94.9, Sundays from 11 a.m. and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, you are listening to Word for Word. Dean Beck with you today, and my special guest is Liao Young Far. He is founder of an organisation who has got an online resource for people to tell their stories. It's called I Will Survive, and it's particularly targeted to young gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender people in Singapore. Now, Young Far, the idea behind this was sparked by, as we said earlier, your friend's suicide. But to get something off the ground with resource links, websites, Facebook pages, and, you know, whilst you are a social worker by profession, that doesn't make you a website developer or a multimedia person or a graphic artist. Tell us how you went about putting this together.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, I've got a day job. So I did all this work with I Will Survive outside of my day job. So while holding our day job, basically got around to talking to different people, getting ideas from them and trying to get a sense of, you know, is this possible? Should this be done? Can it even be done? Is it even feasible? And I still remember on the flight back home from Sydney and just thinking on this, I was just writing down all the thoughts I had in the notebook and coming up with possible book titles. That was the first thing I tried to do. And then thinking about what should I do? You know, should I start talking to people for their stories first, or should I just think about how to go about doing it? So, because I do know some people who've been through a difficult time, so personal context of mine, and I thought, well, I'll just start with them and see what they think, how comfortable they were with sharing with me their very personal stories. And after a while, I thought, because some of these issues that they were sharing with me were very personal, some very difficult, so they're not all coming out stories, because for many of them, there's still a sense of they're not quite ready to come out to not just their families or friends, but to Singapore, the rest of the country.
But the story of that struggle of even not coming out is, I would imagine, just as relevant.
Absolutely.
To others.
Yeah, yeah, but the living with being gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and having perhaps some other personal issues to deal with as well. So the one thing I sort of put in place quite early on in the work I was doing is to invite people to share with me their stories, but anonymously. On that condition that, you know, their real names, their identities will not be revealed. So all the names in the book are pseudonyms. As far as possible, I have kept everything they've told me about themselves, but without having too much identifying information. So, for example, the first person I spoke with shared with me about how he had been, and he still is actually, living with bipolar depression. So he had that phrase that sort of sums it all up. For him, it was like having or living in a double closet, the first closet of having to deal with the mental illness, bipolar depression, before he had an opportunity or even time to deal with being gay, because he was diagnosed with bipolar depression when he was a teenager, and the whole gay thing coming out, or that realization, only came about later on as an adult.
In this country, the last 10 or 15 years, we have come a long way in understanding the issues of mental health, and we've also come a long way in being able to openly talk about it without fear of stigma and shame.
It happens too in Singapore, certainly.
Is Singapore on that path of acceptance, or
we are? In my day job, obviously, we see some of that, but very gradual. And I suppose it does require a lot of work through community organizations, government coming in and campaign services, stories. And stories are such a powerful, powerful way of dispelling myths and promoting awareness, understanding. So that was another reason why I wanted to do this, to humanize a lot of issues we read about in the newspapers or and to letting people know that these are real people with real stories. The only thing I've changed is just their names.
I will survive SG. Why SG?
SG is short for Singapore.
That is the international code, you said, the airport.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. Okay, there we go. Now I know. I will survive SG.wordpress.com is where you can find more information. Tell us a bit about the website, because you've got, it's quite extensive.
Thank you.
You've done very well.
Thank you, WordPress.
It's amazing what you can do with free access.
I know, isn't it?
But it's a really good...
It's really helped.
Yeah.
I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, as a complete IT phobe, completely unskilled in website design and all that, having access to those free services and make it just user-friendly. I mean, the way I see it is, if I find it easy enough to access, then hopefully other people will too, with links and going through all those tabs. So there's excerpts of stories on that, resources for the LGBT communities in Singapore, also very personal testimonies. So on top of the 21 stories from people in the LGBT communities in Singapore, I've also had contributions from 4 different people, notable personalities in Singapore. So we've got 2 former nominated members of parliament contribute their personal essays, and another one from a transgender activist, Leona, and of course an essay contributed by Reverend Yap, who is himself a former Methodist Bishop of Singapore.
Right.
So very, very grateful to the 4 of them for contributing their personal take on, you know.
So it's part It Gets Better, it's part Beyond Blue, which is our mental health auspice. So it's... Yeah, look, the website is actually fantastic. The resources are universal. They don't have to be directly related to Singapore. But the stories are just amazing. And my hat off to you for starting it up.
How
long has it been up and running now?
Well, I started work on a book in March 2009. I was actually in Sydney for Mardi Gras. As a book, it was published in 2011. So that's just over a year. So the ebook has been published. It's out there. Apparently, it's found in all ebook stores. Just do a search.
I Will Survive.
Right. Yep. So you might just want to add in my name as well. Makes it a bit easier. Otherwise, Gloria Gaynor CDs.
Yes.
But there are plans as we speak for a print version of it coming up later this year with a different publisher.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
Good on you. You don't want to stop at 21 stories, surely. Yeah. How are you going to continue to...
As I mentioned earlier, I mean, putting these stories together, I spoke to lots of different people, some of whom didn't contribute their stories, and also had feedback from other friends who thought that, well, they were perhaps rightly or wrongly concerned about the tone of some of the stories, about how, you know, putting out all these stories, what would it do for the community? You know, are you going to... showcase the worst and the gloomiest of what it's like, you know, would it make us look bad, and what would the non-LGBT community think of us, and is this what we want our young LGBT folk to worry about? And I thought, hang on, that's useful feedback, but that is certainly not the intention, because a lot of the stories do, and I made a point as I was interviewing all the contributors, for them to share in their stories how they've managed, or more than just managed, survive, how they've coped and how they've thrived. So that message hopefully comes through as well. Back to your question about how I want to take it from here. I'm not sure if I wanted to put together another set of stories of this nature, but certainly more stories. Have a couple of ideas in mind, couple of working titles in mind as well. So certainly more stories. I would like to go out and do that, collect more stories.
What about one called I Will Succeed and have role models of inspiring role models within the gay community?
I was thinking more Well, I suppose I'm a slight romantic at heart, so I have another one.
I will love.
What's that Donna Summer song? I Feel Love. So that's that's one of my working. So love stories of people who have
long-term relationships, relationships.
Yeah, so that in itself is quite universal as well, love. And possibly another one. I'll just share the other working title I have for another possible project. We Are Family. So isn't that who sang that song? I can't remember. Is it Aretha Franklin?
You've got me.
Sister Sledge.
Yes.
Okay, so We Are Family. It's working title. It's just an idea at this stage. Stories of families of the rainbow nature.
Right.
Yeah. And it could be along the lines of LGBT person talks to family member and gets their story. Mm. So it's almost like it's a slightly different spin on it, I don't know. But then it's just ideas at this point. So I start with the working title and see what happens from there.
Here in Australia, gay and lesbian couples are having children at rates like we've never seen before. Is it the same in Singapore?
Well, of course it's less easy. I do know of rainbow families in Singapore. At this point in time in Singapore, probably they're more in the minority. I suppose there will be practical challenges: housing, education, access to services. But I don't see how things. They shouldn't stay this way. So mm-hmm. It might change. I'm quite sure it will. First of all, we need to get that ridiculous section of the penal code repealed, get it out of the way, and then I think things will just make it so,
and
just,
are there,
so much easier.
Are there concerted lobby groups that are focused on getting this particular law changed?
Yes.
No, you haven't given up yet.
No, we haven't. Right. So like mentioned, two cases pending before the High Court, and I do know that the people who are behind that, it's wonderful. They are working very, very hard. So it's going to be really exciting. Yeah, and I do believe that piece of legislation will be repealed within, I used to think it will be repealed within my lifetime, but it might happen within the next few years.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Look, who knows? As you know,
it has to go that way. Yeah.
We're having the debate about marriage equality here.
Yep.
Your
rest of the world has done it.
You're 20 years behind us in, you know, getting those laws changed about decriminalisation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you think that once you get that law changed, marriage equality will be then high on the list?
Certainly. Yeah. Or not just that, but lots of other things as well. Access to services, access to, you know, services for same-sex couples, families, individuals as well, sexual health services,
see,
education.
None of that can follow until you get, you make it legal.
Because right now it's a bit of a double bind. Yes, I mean, I do know of groups who are doing safer sex education and safer sex health services, but it has to be done in such a discreet, sort of a neutral way. And
see, this is the thing. When you've got something that's illegal, how do you educate the population in a sexual health message, mm-hmm. because for a start, it's illegal.
Mm-hmm. So you tell the kids it's legal.
You've got to get the country to acknowledge that it exists.
Absolutely. So, I think we, as a country, we acknowledge it exists, but then at the same time, we're also telling the kids in mainstream education that it's illegal. So, and that frightens young LGBT people. That's frightening. So that's what we have to work against.
Thailand has the worst HIV rates in the world, the highest infection rates in the world. What is HIV like in Singapore? Where is it at?
I'm not sure about actual rates, but we're looking at, for a population of, resident population of about 5 million, we get about 400 new cases a year, or between 400 to 500 cases a year. So it's more than one a day. HIV, newly diagnosed cases. And again, as we know around the world, that's not probably not a true indication of infection rates.
But by population, that's far greater than Australia. At 22 million, we have 1,000 new cases each year.
But that's across the general population. So if I'm not wrong, gay men account for about 20-25% of new cases every year.
Is that all? I say that because here it's higher, 95%.
Okay. 95%. Okay, it used to be lower, but again, it probably has got a lot to do with higher testing rates among the gay male population compared to the general population.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so we have all that. Anonymous testing.
75% of new cases are heterosexual.
So yeah, so for us it's amongst heterosexual men.
Wow. Yeah. See that here, heterosexual cases equate for less than 10%.
Okay. Have they found out why? Is it again testing rates or is it behaviours or
it's still a gay man's disease in this country. Yangfa, what do you want to do with your particular we spoke about some of your other sort of breakaway websites, but you don't want to create new websites for each one of those, maybe a book. But what do you want to do with these resources and this web page that you've got and how do you want to get it out there for the youth of Singapore?
I'd like people to know about it, tell their friends and read out about resources. If anyone knows of someone, whether it's in Singapore or within the region, and they want to know how to get in touch with community groups or resources or services, check out the website. There's a link to contact me, and then I'll see how I can help. Link it up to groups and people I know who work in this and do this very important work in Singapore.
We have, as you know, a huge Asian student population here that come to Australia each year, many from Singapore. For us, one of the hardest things is to connect to them about sexual health and connect and inform them of the facilities and I guess the accessibility of those facilities in this country, which may be different too.
Different levels of barriers to access. For some of the students from outside of Australia, there might be a sense of being a minority within a minority, or maybe even another level of minority is a fear or stigma within the student community. You know, you do want to blend in. You don't want to stand out when you're a student, especially if you're an international student.
And also there's the cultural, this cultural difference, but there's the cultural baggage as well comes with it.
We'll just talk about that. I mean, regardless of whether family of origin are actually here in Singapore, here in Australia or from or still back home, there's still a sense of, you know, what you're brought up with, the cultural norms, conventions, what's appropriate or not. It might take time getting used to, you know. For some students, I imagine, they may not have ever come out to their families back home. So being away from home, it's part of that process. And then having to access services as and when they need them.
Well, the other side of that coin is that when they're away from their family,
support.
Well, sometimes it's a kid in a candy store, you know, and they go crazy, as all young kids would. But with that comes, you know, mistakes and risk-taking and all that sort of stuff.
And then your sort of traditional source of support, family back home, is not there. They may be a phone call away, but they're not physically there. So the nature of support has changed, the risks have changed, having to take on additional responsibilities as well. And so that's very stressful. I mean, I sometimes wonder whether, I mean, having been an international student myself when I was at university, I sometimes wonder whether we do enough for our international students, well, all international students, but in particular, certain groups of international students, such as LGBT students or students from very diverse or different backgrounds. Yeah, within a campus community.
Mind you, we're quite prepared to charge them top dollar for our education facilities. We welcome them with open arms as long as they got the check.
And cash preferably.
Cash preferably.
A bank draft, yeah.
Quite true.
And a suitcase.
Yes, indeed. But a piece of paper ensuring that they will return, that sort of stuff.
With expectation, and yet you sometimes wonder that support while they're here as students.
Yeah, and frankly, they're subsidising the education for us locals. They're making sure that we have the high-end facilities that we have because they're paying the top dollar for it. Yeah, very interesting.
And that's just for the student community. What about the migrant community as
indeed,
well?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. How many refugees does Singapore take per annum?
I don't think we even take any.
Thought I'd throw that in just for good measure.
We just sort of send them off to somewhere else.
Yes. Well, so do we. So do we now. Yeah. Interesting. Oh, dear. Liao Yangfa, it's been an absolute delight to speak with you today, and I really thank you for your insights, both about Asia and also about some of the cultural differences between us and your homeland.
One last thing I have to mention to all your listeners, something else we're extremely proud of in Singapore. Every year for the past 4 years, we've been doing something called Pink Dot. Don't know if anyone's heard of it on your show. Pink Dot is what I suppose you could call it, our own LGBT Pride Carnival Festival. Every year around May, June, or at some point in the middle of the year, we basically get as many people as you can together in this one spot in Singapore, get everyone dressed in pink, and take an aerial photo photograph.
As a circle.
Oh, well, wow. In the very first year, it started, 2009, it started with about 2,000 people all dressed in pink, and we formed a dot. And then the following year, the numbers doubled. We somehow managed to form a dot and lots of other shapes. So it got to the point where last year, 2012, first ever nighttime pink dot. Still wear pink, but with pink LED torches.
Wow.
There were 10,000 people. And
that's fantastic.
Form a splodge. A huge, beautiful pink splodge.
Where can we see these pictures?
Pink.sg.
Pink.sg.
Yeah, so that's a website. It's beautiful, beautiful pictures. And again, I know the wonderful people who are behind that is excellent. And so the idea behind Pink Dot is, well, it's the tagline is freedom to love, regardless of your sexual or gender orientation. Simple as that. Again, love is universal.
My guest today has been Liao Yangfa. He's the founder of I Will Survive, sg.wordpress.com. It's a great website. Check it out. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dean.
There will be a podcast of this interview available for download from Joy's website, joy.org.au. And if you'd like to correspond with the program, simply send an email, wordforword@joy.org.au. I'm Dean Beck. You can follow me on Twitter at Dean Beck on Air. Till next time, you keep well, take care. Bye for now.
Word for Word is produced by Robert Briley and presented by Dean Beck from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9. Word for Word is made possible thanks to funding provided by the Community Broadcasting Foundation and is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations in the Community Radio Network.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.